All right, everybody, this is Gordon, W2 Tango Tango Tango, and we're going to start the TechNet now. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. That's always my favorite response to that question, by the way. All righty, very good. This is K2BAR. Station of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. This net is run weekly on the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club 2-meter repeater. It's open to all radio amateurs who have privileges in the 2-meter band in the United States of America. It's also available via Echolink for those licensed amateurs to operate via Echolink and, more importantly, on the 2-meter band. Or whatever band they use to access a remote Echolink, if any. The Echolink node is Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet -L, K2 Foxtrot Juliet -L, and we will have a sign in for those folks as well. Some folks like to just log in there as well as on voice so they can text each other back and forth, because Echolink has a texting facility. So if you have Echo Station loaded into your computer or into your palm or to your iPhone or whatever, you can also text back and forth as well, which I think is kind of neat. In any case, and I will check in on that as well in a few moments myself. I'll have a link up if anyone wants to text me. They can use the Echolink there. If nothing else, just for the texting, even if they don't want to access via Echolink. But tell your friends in other places they can certainly listen, if not even check in. We'd like all our radio amateurs to check in. This is a technical discussion about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, things in our society that, you know, use those things, which is pretty much everything. And so you're pretty much free to talk about whatever you like. Kind of frame the question correctly. I do have some things. I have a little spiel about J-poles tonight. I learned something over the weekend, or during the week, and I'll tell a great story about that. We'll get to that in a little bit. But first we need to log in and find out who's here. We do want you to check in even if you don't have a question or a comment for the net, because it helps us frame the answers, as well as also you might become yourself an impromptu resource to answer a question that you didn't even realize you could answer. But your experience is valuable, no matter whether you got your amateur radio license today or, you know, 50 years ago. All is good. So, with that in mind, please check in with your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. And we'll do it in an orderly manner. So any station whose call sign begins with Kilo, followed by the number 2, please call K2BAR.
This is K2AMI, Tony.
Okay, Tony, any questions or comments for the net?
No questions, no comments at this time.
Okay, Tony, very good, thank you. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2ZO.
Okay, Jim, good evening to you. Any questions or comments from you?
No, not at this time.
Wow. Some of my chattiest guys are shying away from talking. I don't know what to think. Must be the dog days of summer. Alrighty, any other Kilo 2s?
AS2ID, sorry, no comments and no questions.
Okay, Ben, very good. Dear me, 3 for 3. Any other Kilos? Okay, any call signs beginning with Kilo, please call K2BAR. Alrighty, how about Whiskey?
WE2R, Charlie, with a question.
All right, Charlie. Very good. Nice to hear you again. Thank you for your audio analysis before. Any other whiskeys? Alrighty. Let's go to November's. Any November?
This is NS2K. No questions at this point.
Okay. By the way, Jim, I have something which you and maybe K2FJ and a few others might want to hear about. Gordon operating a 7700. I'll explain that in a few minutes. No, there's not one in my shack, but I will talk about that as well. Any other Novembers? Okay, how about Alpha stations?
Alpha Juliet 4, Whiskey Delta, Rachel, and I do have a question.
Okay, very good, Rachel. Good evening to you. And you have a question? That's excellent. Actually, I may have a question for you regarding, some of the Farallon's plans to do EchoLink and EchoLink and IRLP in the same node. I'm kind of curious about the software for that, so I'll just post that as a question I have. And we'll save that one for later. Any other Alpha stations? Okay, any other stations linked to the net, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR. Kilo Charlie 2, Sierra, Oscar Uniform, Ron, Carney, I do have a question.
Okay, Ron, good evening to you. I got you in here. And noted the question. Any other stations? Well, let's get to it. Charlie, it's all yours. W2R, K2BAR. Your question, sir.
K2BAR, WE2R. Okay, thanks, Gordon. This is actually on behalf of a friend of mine who is planning an epic kayak voyage. Really ambitious. And he's going to carry electronics with him. He has a device that will charge his telephone, his cell phone, and GPS. But the Marine HT requires 12 volts. Is there any commercial power pack, maybe with a solar cell built in, or that would supply the 12 volts necessary to keep his handheld radio charged? Knows of such a package that comes ready-made, essentially. Back to Net, this is...
Give me a break.
Okay. Well, let's see. My first question back to you would be, will there be any portaging, or is he basically getting in his kayak, paddling until he stops paddling, drag his kayak up on shore, camp for the night, and then repeat the process after day? Or is he going to be lugging this thing across the woods somewhere?
No, he won't be lugging it. He'll be beaching it when he can. But that'll be erratic. But no, there won't be any portaging. All the travel will be by water.
How many days and where?
Well, it's the Mediterranean in many days. He's shooting to go from Gibraltar to Israel. And he's very serious about it. He's preparing well and practicing and working out. It's a crazy scheme, but if anybody could do it, this guy can. So I'm not sure how many days, but, he expects to spend a fair amount of time on shore. When he does that, he'll be able to charge the radio. But there'll be long stretches when he won't have access to, the grid.
Is he intending on running that marine radio all the time or only when it's needed? Go ahead, Jim.
He may be forced to just use it when it's needed, but for safety reasons, he probably should have it on a good deal of the time.
Yeah, I would think so. K2ZO, you had a comment?
Yeah, I'm looking at a couple of them here on the internet here on eBay. You can buy 12 volts solar panel battery charger maintainers in different wattages. I see one for 15 watts. I see one for 5 watts. I see one for 2 watts, the small things. They put out 12 volts, put them in the sun, and they range in price from, in the 20s and $30 on up to $300 for the big ones. But I don't think that's what he wants, the big one. But there's a number of them that are listed here. So they're around. Just do a search for 12-volt solar battery chargers, solar charger, whatever, and you'll find them.
I was specifically going to mention, kind of following Jim's idea, 15 watts or more of full-volt power. That's full sunlight. So I would get two. I'd get the rollout kind because they're reasonably water-resistant, and have him look at those. There are some that are more water-resistant than others. But if he can affix Velcro pads, waterproof Velcro pads, to the back of it and onto his kayak, so when the waters are calm, not going to get sloshed on too much, he could lay those out there and charge I'm thinking 24 or 36 ampere hour of steel lead acids, small ones, the kinds that are like half the size of a brick, and charge those and then run his electronics from that. I think that would be a good balance. Is he planning to do this next summer, or is he going to do something crazy like try to do this in winter?
He's going to try for a fall, and that's based on weather forecast. What size lead acid battery would you suggest?
I said 24 to 36 ampere hour. Basically the size of a slightly large lunch pail.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll do that. Jim, thank you. We'll take your suggestion and do that search that you suggested. And, go from there. It's going to be interesting. anyway, thank you.
You're welcome. I think Jim's right about the search. But when you do that search, I would look for the roll-up ones and look for ones that are reasonably sealed. If you see the kind that people advertise, you can put on backpacks, things like that. The problem is he's got a little different environment than most in that he's going to have sunny weather and moisture in the same place. So the good news is if he has like a 24 to, say, 38 ampere hour steel lead acid, somewhere in that range, it'll be the size of a motorcycle battery by the time it's all done. And you can simply just strap one or two of those solar cells onto it. He's going to need to have some waterproof fittings on it and keep those batteries dry. I'm sure he's got a space inside his kayak for that. But, depends on how much room he can spare, too. But the roll-up solar panels are really good. And, again, if he puts down good Velcro on the body of his kayak, then when they're exposed, they can just be held in place by Velcro, and when he wants to secure them, he just pop the power connector off the battery and roll them up and put them and stow them. That way they're not in the way or subject to theft or whatever. But that sounds great. He's certainly got an ambitious game plan. Sea kayaking is a whole other game. So that's pretty cool. We'd like to know more about his adventures as they come closer to fruition, okay?
Yeah, he'll be blogging. So when he goes, I can announce what his blog's going to be, and he'll be updating his progress that way.
Yeah, and tell him at least one person here doesn't think he's Meshuggah.
Yeah, that's the one person in the world who doesn't think that.
Yeah, it's me. This guy married, by the way?
No, he's not. He's a strong-willed, independent young man. Not married yet. I think if he were, he would not be allowed to do such a attempt such a stunt.
He has to be married to a very special woman. Anyway, very good. That's awesome. I'm surprised he's not getting his ham license along the way in preparation for this. But all right. Very, very good. Anybody else have any questions or comments about the subject of mobile operation, as it were, with radios on maritime in maritime environments? Okay, one more comment myself, and that is that last summer I canoed about 60 or 70 miles through the Adirondacks, and what I did was I had things in a dry bag that performed adequately well, and everything was inside the dry bag was in another dry bag, so I had double dry bags. The radio equipment was in one, and then there was a lightweight one, but very, very thoroughly sealed, and then it was a more ruggedized, heavy vinyl dry bag into which that first bag went, along with other things. And then the batteries went in one of those orange boxes, the smaller ones. We had an odd number of people in our canoe party, so the smallest guy ended up being my battery walla. The guy who carried the batteries, the smallest scout, carried Mr. Beatty's batteries. He learned to hate them. But he's a ham, too. He's KC2WJA. That's pretty amusing. All right, let's move on. AJ4WD, Rachel, your question, ma'am. K2BAR.
K2BAR, AJ4WD. I have a question, and this is with regard to the power that I have for my rig in my car. I have it connected directly from the battery, routed into the passenger compartment, and right now it's directly connected through two fuses that then go to the radio. One fuse is on the negative lead, the other fuse, of course, is on the positive lead. What I want to do is put a relay in so that when the car is shut off, the battery is disconnected. And the question I have is, one, is it a good idea to put a relay in? Two, should the relay be installed closer to the battery so that the line is dead leading into the passenger compartment? Or three, should the relay be in the passenger compartment so it's as close to the radio as possible? I'm thinking of using the accessory as the power to energize the relay so that when the car is turned off and the accessory shuts off, then the relay, of course, would disengage. AJ4WD, back to net.
Okay, well, from a safety viewpoint, the right place to do this is right by the battery. And in an ideal world, if you can tolerate the voltage drop, you can put fuses at the battery terminals, going into the relay, and then out of the relay you have the lead, then you have your fuses at the far end. Most systems can't handle that kind of voltage drop. Gets to be ridiculous, and then if you do something like I did with a rig runner, it gets even more ridiculous because by the definition you have a 0.7 volt drop through that thing. Having said all that, I would definitely put the relay near the battery. I like your idea of running the accessory. This is like a religious conversation, though. You should be aware. Some people view that you know, shut down all power to all radios, blah, 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 when your car is turned off. Other people think that no matter what, that power should stay on. you manually turn it off or have a master radio power switch. I must confess I've taken the latter approach, but I see a lot of value to the approach you're doing. So I'm kind of curious what other people would think.
Comment?
Yes, Mr. Jim.
I was at Wayne Electronics the other day, and they sell an automotive style relay, which is exactly intended for doing that. It's sealed, little plastic cube. And, yeah, it should be close to the battery. That's the way they tell you to do that. The only thing you have to be careful about now, you're going to run a 12-volt lead to control it. And I know someone in our club did that, but he used the lead that went to the radio, car radio. So what happens is when you start the car, where you have the radio on, let's say you're listening, you've got accessory, you want it working that way, when you hit the starter, it breaks that lead for a second. So it would turn off his radio. He didn't understand that, why that was happening. So you got to just check the accessory lead and make sure that you pick the one that stays powered when you energize the starting solenoid. If that's not a problem, the radio going on and off again, and it is not in most cases. This was a HF radio, which had to reboot. That's all you have to worry about. But the relays itself are cheap. They're automotive style, and you can buy them over there. He's got them right on the counter over at Wayne Electronics.
Comment. I mean, the sealed part is the key point. You just can't throw any relay. I was going to leave that for the second part, but you got that. Good. That's key, key, key. Anybody else with some comments?
Comment, KF2ID.
Mr. Ben, go right ahead.
I don't know what you were saying about the the utility being the power source being shut off when you shut off the ignition. In my car, I have a power source that one plugs in and to run external items, and it doesn't shut off when the ignition is on because I may want to run those items even though the car is ignition is off. So you better check that if it's the same sort of thing I was thinking of. And also, my radio can be run when the ignition is shut off. So I'm not too sure. Maybe the newer ones do that. I don't know. But my car is 11 years old. So it may be that the newer ones do that. That's my first comment. Second comment, I want to refer back to the original comments about the kayak. Be very careful about the connectors. You have DC and you have salt water. That means it's going to be electrolyte-like conditions occurring any place water can get in, so that you may find connectors decomposing and things like that. So so be very, very careful about your connectors when using that kayak-mounted equipment. KF2ID.
Yeah, both good points. Kayak one second, and then the other point is, Rachel, I warned you there's a religious conversation here as to whether or not you really want to do what you're suggesting you want to do. For a lot of good reasons, there's arguments both ways. Ben's is that I want to use the equipment no matter what, and yours is that you want to, you know, electrically isolate and remove hazards from any or any current drain, both hazards or current drain, from the battery that might be unanticipated. Both are wise and willy things to do. Personally, I've been contemplating, and in fact, I was in the process of doing it with my van before the engine blew up. Was getting ready to in my case, I was going to put in a relay that was actuated by a switch that had its own low power lead, you know, low current lead that was separately fused, and back in the passenger compartment, basically for all the accessories, so that basically I could turn off my ham shack, my computers, and miscellaneous other devices that were auxiliary to the vehicle. I was actually going to build that into my console and go from there. I've been interrupted in that project or process because my van is now getting a new engine. And it's taking a while to do because I had to order it twice. They got the wrong one. But anyway, all things considered, it's pretty neat and nifty. What else do I want to mention? Anyway, anybody else have any comments before I throw it back to Rachel for hers? Who's the other station with a comment?
K2WOQ, Newburgh, New York.
Is that K2WLQ and your name?
K2WOQ and my name is Al.
KB2WOQ, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Hal. Say a few words.
What I wanted to comment on was the relay. One thing you probably should do when you put the relay in is put what they call a backward diode across the relay coil. The reason being, when you open that contact, for any reason, and you don't have a diode there, there's a big voltage peak that comes down the line, and that's typically what burns your relays or your switches. That's the first comment. The second comment I would make is, I would put the battery first, the fuse second, then the relay. Reason being, if any short occurs between then and there and the fuse through the relay, you could fry the relay because of where the connection is placed.
Right, so battery, fuse, relay, and oh, by the way, a reverse polarized diode. That could be a simple, like a 5-amp relay be enough? I mean, 5-amp diode enough?
This is like a 1N series, 1N4000, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, so it's simple even just a 1-ampere relay. Okay, good. Good choice. Anything else, Hal?
That's it. I'll be sitting on the side. KT2WOQ.
Yeah, just real quick, Hal, where are you located in New York?
Here in Newburgh by Stewart Airport.
Oh, man. Great, super. All right, thank you for checking in. Anybody else have any comments for Rachel's question? All righty, Rachel, back to you. What do you think?
K2BAR, AJ4WT. I will expand on what I've said. I do have two fuses. Because to me that was a no-brainer. I have two fuses attached to the battery, and they are in sealed sealed fuse holders, so that it's watertight. That's 230-amp fuses right there. Then I have my cable coming from there into the passenger compartment. And I have another two fuses at a much lower amperage appropriate for the rig. So I do have double fused, one at each end, one more in tune with the radio, by the radio, and of course one for 30 amps at the battery. With regard to the switch, that's a great idea. I could put in a single pole double throw switch where I have it in the auto mode so that it automatically shuts off, or I could push it down into manual mode and override and keep that relay engaged. So that is a great idea, a great option. With regard to Ben's comment, I do have a couple of options there. One is there is a relay that's being used with the fog lights, so that when the car shuts off, the headlights and fog lights are turned off. So I can connect into that circuit in the engine compartment to control the relay. And yes, Hal, I am aware and was going to put a 1N 4001 diode across the relay coil for that inverse current surge when the coil releases. The next question I had is, it would be overkill to put a switch on the negative lead, a relay on the negative lead as well as the positive, so I have a double pull, double throw switch, or just the positive side being on a relay. And yes, Jim, I have two of those sealed relays that are automotive grade. They are the relays intended for the engine compartment, so they are watertight sealed, as opposed to a relay that is just a dust cover. This is AJ4WD, returning it back for additional comment.
Repeater. Repeater. Timeout. Clear.
This is AJ4WD. I guess I timed the repeater out, Gordon. You were talking, I could hear you on the input, but of course nothing was going on the output. My apologies.
Well, my apologies as well, because I didn't leave enough of a drop for the repeater to recover, so I ended up, you know, daisy chaining on your timeout. Actually, if I had just left it where you unkeyed, you were perfect. You were absolutely perfect. That was the gist of my first comment. Let me drop it for a second. All right, so no worries about that. So the next thing is, as I said, what you may want to do is take the stout 30-amp connector, 30-amp fuses on each lead using heavy wire, number four or better, depending on how far you want to go, and you can calculate the voltage drop. But, you know, add another tenth or two each for the fuses and for the relay. And, you know, decide whether or not that's okay for FM at 50 watts. It's probably okay. But if you're running single sideband radios and things like that, you might consider the addition of a boost regulator. And I'm partial to the N8XJK models, but they're pricey, but if you're going to run HF or any kind of single sideband, you might consider those as well. All right. Anybody else want to make a comment?
K2AMI.
Tony, go right ahead.
I just want to reflect on a comment where you indicate that when the ignition is turned off, all the power in the automotive car is completely shut down. Well, I recently had an experience where I did that. I shut my car down and went into the house. And I came back a half an hour later, and lo and behold, the cabin fan, that is a fan inside the car, was roaring at high speed. I said, that's strange. And I put the ignition in, and everything reset itself. Did that at least three times now. I've noticed that the cabin fan comes on about, according to the instruction book, 50 minutes after the ignition is turned off. And again, their comment was, if the air conditioner is used. So in my car, they have a device that clears the moisture out of the air conditioner a half an hour after the entire unit is shut down. It's automatically controlled, timer operated, and it takes care of itself. So it's something new that I learned, and I wondered if some other new cars have got a feature like that also. I also spoke with Ron Basco, and he said that he discovered when he went out to his car one night, late night, after having left the car off for a while, his Prius was roaring away with some noises. And when he called the dealer told him that there is a housekeeping thing that goes on automatically without your control after you shut the engine down. So some of these new cars are a little bit strange.
My, oh my. Well, I can understand what's going on in your car. Do you care to speculate? I have my own reasons, but anybody have a reason to think as to why there might be a... any reason there might be a fan going? I know why.
In my car, it's a matter of blowing the moisture out of the air conditioner evaporator coil and reducing the possibility of mold.
Okay, the reason is, think about Legionnaire's disease. Moisture and, you know, gathering in a HVAC system, getting all sorts of yucky, and so by drying it out, they avoid all that, shall we say, evilness.
Exactly. And again, this happens to be an older model Volvo, with an unusual feature. I don't have it on my newer car.
Yeah. Did you get something new, by the way?
It's new to me, but a neighbor had a low-ball offer on a trade-in, and I needed a new car because I sold my truck, and this is my second car.
Oh, my God. Tony is truckless?
Yeah, it hurts, but I'm truckless.
Oh, my God. Anyway, I'll just say being without my van for the last 2 months, 2 months plus, has been more than a challenge, to say the least. It's going on 3 months, but we'll have it back soon. All righty. Very good. Anybody else want to comment about Tony's or Rachel's suggestions? All right, Rachel. Back to you, AJ4WD, and then we'll take a round of check-ins. This is K2BAR.
K2BAR, AJ4WD. I appreciate all of the comments, advice, suggestions, and I think I will, as my initial thought, put the relay just on the positive side in the engine compartment, hooking the relay coil to the same circuit that shuts off the headlights, and I'll think about bringing it back to a switch so that I have the option of overriding the automatic shutoff so that I do have the ability to use the radio when the car is shut down. Because I know that if I'm using the headlights, then even if I'm in the accessory position, the headlights would still be in the off position, and so I'd have to have an alternative. Again, thank you very much. HH4WT, back to net.
Yeah, okay. I'm just thinking that though, I've seen a lot of trouble with RFI and noise suppression when people don't use a second lead directly from the battery. So whether you decide to switch it or not is one thing, but you might want to bring a ground lead directly from the battery to your radio equipment and bond it along the way. That might be something to think about. Alrighty. One other thing is don't forget to fuse the override switch. If you do decide to implement the override switch, make sure you fuse that as well appropriately. Alrighty, anybody else want to check into the Barra TechNet before we move on? Could we have any other check-ins? This is K2BAR.
Comment.
EK, done, no comments.
Jim, I get your comment in a minute, and were there any other check-ins?
N2OEL, one question.
We'll add you to the question list. Mr. Noel, good evening to you, and thank you for that little call before. Any other check-ins? C2SOU's question. Jim?
Yeah, JEK is trying to check in as well. Anyway, quickly a little comment to the damper diode. While you have one across the contacts, or so that you don't you avoid any of the kickback, inductive kickback, you also want to put one right across the coil. also reverse biased, so that it will suck up any kickback current. Otherwise, you'll have a bit of a surprise high current pulse going back through to the switch, which the switch probably won't be heard, but it does cause a bit of noise that you really don't want.
I thought that's what you were talking about, a reverse polarized diode across the coil. Were you talking about a diode somewhere else?
Oh, I was talking about the across the coil. I think he had also said it might be a good idea to put it across the relay contact on the switch side of it as well.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Okay, I was assuming the coil was what was being discussed. Let's get that straightened out. Let's see who made that suggestion. Jim. Did you make that suggestion? No, Ben did, I guess. Ben, were you thinking of across the contacts or across the coil?
2WOQ.
Go ahead, WOQ.
I'm the one that made the comment that it goes across the coil. Just across the coil, what my comment was said is if you don't put it across the coil, and you use a dry relay or a dry switch, when you open the switch, you're going to put the kickback on it, like you were saying. That high current kickback is actually off the contact flow. That's what you're going to be careful of.
So it goes across the coil to protect the contacts.
Protect anything that's feeding that or using to turn that coil on, yes.
Okay. Then it's reverse biased across the coil. Got it. Very good. No problem.
Comment.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Jim, NS2K's comment was valid as well. If you want to protect the contacts in the relay, you'd want to reverse bias the diode across the contacts as well. That way you don't get the arcing if it's under duress. I've done both a diode across the contacts as well as a diode across the coil. So thank you, Jim, for reminding me of that. And both are excellent ideas. Back to Nick.
Well, yeah. That'd be like opening the relay while transmitting key down FM or something. Yikes. Okay. Yeah, that could certainly be something worthwhile protecting against. Okay, very good. Anybody else with this subject? All right, well, thank you very much again, Hal, for jumping in and straightening us out on that. Rachel, good comments as well. All righty. Let's just see if there's any check-ins before we go to Ron's question. Any other check-ins for the net, please call K2BAR. Station?
W2JEK, if Noel is on here, I just wanted to remind him that there is an article in the latest QST about putting up a mast on the our recreational vehicle. I don't know if he gets a QST, but it sounds like just what the doctor wrote it to him.
Just got it today's mail.
Okay, well, I'm going to... Yeah, I actually have mine, too. I left mine in the truck, but... in a small truck, but... I definitely want to look at that article myself. Alrighty. KC2SOU. Welcome aboard. Your question.
K2BAR, KC2SOU. I appreciate it. Question is, it's an interference situation. Down over here in Kearney, I'm running a Kenwood 950 SD G5RV Junior, sloping from 60 feet down to about 30 feet from the chimney down to the clothesline. My interference situation has just started the past week. It's about 6 days old. The weird part about it is it's about 3 megahertz wide. I have interference about S9 to 20 over 9 from approximately 12.5 megahertz up to 15.5 megahertz. It's gotten to the point where 20 meters is no longer viable at all. Again, it just recently started. I would assume if it was more for power lines, it would be more broadbanded. At this point, I'm kind of lost for ideas. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. Back to net control.
Okay, you don't have any problems on 40 meters or on 30 meters?
Negative. 40 meters is fine, 30 meters is fine, and 17 meters is perfectly, you can't tell at all.
Okay, let me ask a couple of questions. What kind of, you said it was a dipole, inverted V-type dipole. What band is it cut for, and how are you feeding it between the radio and the feed point of the antenna?
It's a G5RV. It's 51 feet long. It's does not cut for any particular band. It's multi-band. And it has 17 feet of 450 window line coming to coax.
Okay, and then you have so many feet of coax to a tuner?
QSL, I have 100 feet of coax going to a MFJ 949.
Okay, the 950 doesn't have a built-in tuner?
It does have a built-in tuner, but I was advised that it's probably not smart to use, considering the radio is approximately 20 years old. It would be better off to use a manual tuner.
Okay. Well, it's a non-resonant antenna, so any natural, shall we say, filtering capabilities, kind of go by the wayside. I was thinking maybe you have an 80-40 trap dipole or something, or a dipole, and oh, by the way, it's 20 meters, and therefore you're getting soft. Tell me what's changed in your neighborhood, anything?
Comment.
Let's put the answer to this question, then the comment. What do you think, Rob?
As far as I know, nothing. Nothing has changed. I have done some research. I've had some interference previously. It was a company down the street from me. They apparently are having a short circuit somewhere in one of their air conditioning units. Apparently that has been solved. But when I had that one, it was from 160 meters all the way up to 6 meters. So this one, what's strange is that it's just that 3 megahertz deal. Other than that, nothing has really changed. Back to net control.
Yeah, KTZO, go.
First of all, the antenna really wouldn't have much to do with it. Have you determined whether this is in your house or in your neighborhood, or where do you think it's coming from?
I have determined it's not coming from the house. I essentially shut off every power to the house, I even have a generator I can run the radio on, and it's clean. It's not coming from the house or the line in. The only research I have done, I recently have driven around the block. I have an A57D in the truck with the Tar Heel in my pickup, and I've went around a block, and I found on 20 meters, I found some noise, if you want to call it that, that is literally 40 over, and it's almost I'll say 150 yards from where I where my residence is, and that was about 40 over 9. Is it connected? I'm going to assume so, but I have no way to prove it. I don't see anything coming from a line or a pole, so I have no way if it's coming from somebody's house or whatnot. Thank you very much, and back to net control.
Well, along the line, what Jim's suggesting is that you might want to get a portable receiver and maybe a small loop and start walking around sniffing for this stuff. That might be one thought. Do you have a radio that's capable of doing that, like a THF6 handy-talkie or some other lightweight portable radio on single sideband on HF that you can tune outside the area in question, make sure that, that things are quiet, and then tune into that area and make sure things are chaotic, and go look for where that chaos is strongest.
Negative. I have no other radio that will do sideband. It's portable to operate and such. Originally what I was doing was taking my AM low band broadcasting 520 and just walking around and trying to find what I needed to find. I'm assuming that will not work because it's not on that low. It's higher at 14 megahertz. Other than that, I think that answers your question. Back to you.
Yeah, I think that would be a good tactic to go sniffing around when you see it on your antenna on HF. Put it on a second receiver using the same antenna just to verify that you can hear it. Then put a loop antenna and start walking around and seeing if you can isolate the source. Anybody have any comments they want to add to this?
I have a question. Is this continuous, or does it go on and off at different times of the day?
For 6 days, it has been continuous. For 6 days, it has been continuous. Again, I have issues other times where it was intermittent. Again, they have been resolved. The one thing I will notice today, which is giving me a little bit more of a clue, was that when it rained, it went from an S, well, from 20 over or 10 over, down to about a 5 and 7. As of right now, it is back up to a 5. It's back up to a 5 and 9 as of now. Does that answer your question?
Oh, that's an interesting clue, especially when it rains. That means it may be outside. One of the things I was going to suggest is that if it was going on and going off, then it might be a consumer device. You know, there's a whole bunch of cheap Chinese switching power supplies on these outdoor lights and these lights in people's cabinets, which cause a heck of a racket.
Yeah, they certainly do. So I'm a little surprised just how quiet they are, but there's more than a fair share of noisy little buggers. So that's the good news. I was reminded of something. I was talking to Mike Gruber up at the league. He took over as the RFI guy from Ed Hare when Ed Hare became the head of the lab. And one of the things that Mike was saying is that everybody was ranting and raving and screaming about CFLs, but no one ever was able to send the league a CFL that was actually making noise. They actually finally went out and bought a bunch of CFLs in a variety of reputable and disreputable places, and found they all were pretty good. So, you know, everybody blogged about it, but no one actually ever experienced anything bad. And here, you know, it's clear cut. You got a problem, but you got to find out the source. Maybe just a cheap power supply. Anybody else have comments?
What were you referencing before, a CF what?
CFL, compact fluorescent light.
They're very quiet. They're no problem at all.
Right. Well, there were allegations that they would be a mess because of the circuitry inside, blah, 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 blah. But as we've learned, they're just fine. You're absolutely right, Jim.
First thing I did when I bought one, take it apart and check it.
I had the mercury work for you.
It's only a small amount of mercury, so, hey, I'm not planning to have any more kids.
there's a rude joke in there, you know.
Oh?
I'll save it. Oh, dear me. Alrighty. Anybody else?
Hey, F2ID. Go ahead, Ben. If you can get yourself, I don't know if you said you had it or not. I guess I was following the discussion. Get yourself a portable receiver, you know, standard ham receiver,
that you put in the car, plug it into your any outlets. As the car noise is not, I don't think it's going to bother you too much. And make up a simple loop and just turn the gain of the receiver down so that that noise comes up, and drive around with that using that simple loop. You get it out of the car and holding it, or get more elaborate, put it on top, however you want to do it. And then I think you'll be able to triangulate on the source what that'll buy, I don't know, but you should be able to triangulate on the source with a simple loop antenna and a standard AM receiver put in the car. If that would help, I don't know. KF2ID.
It'd be a great idea. Absolutely great idea. Okay, good. Anybody else with comments?
Comment.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Sounds to me like a practical application of a fox hunt.
Well, absolutely, and there are HF fox hunts. That's something we have not done. We've had enough fun in games with VHF ones, but absolutely. Anybody else? Alrighty. Well, so back to KB2SAU. What do you think, Ron?
K2BAR, KC2SAU. I gotta tell you, it's a little frustrating dealing with it. We don't normally have this problem, and it comes about out of nowhere, kind of drives you up the wall. But with that said, I definitely do appreciate all the comments, and I thank KC2SKL for reminding me about this net. And I do appreciate everybody's comments. And regarding the fox hunt, that might be a little overkill at this time, but I might ask that future down the road. So with that note, again, I appreciate everybody's comments. Back to net control. This is KC2SAU.
Okay, before we go to the next question, I just want to make an announcement that if anyone is not previously committed to the picnic this Sunday, the Barra picnic is this Sunday, and that all members are welcome. And that's going to be quite the affair. But if you're not going to the picnic, or can make yourself available for the day for the Round Po rally, appreciate any help with that. It's a bike ride that goes from either 5 miles up to as much as 125 miles in a day. And we'll be meeting up at Camp Gall Reservation about 7 o'clock and heading off to various rest stops and other key points along the course to chaperone the riders and make sure they get home safe. So if you're interested, please let me know, and we'd love to have you help out if you're otherwise committed to the picnic. So with that in mind, let's go to the next question, which is to Mr. Noel, and I have some stories to tell about a little jaunt up to the league this past week with some students and prospective hams, which will be very interesting. This is some things we all can learn from with that experience. So in the meantime, N2OEL, your question, sir, K2BAR.
I have three. You want them all together or separate?
One at a time, please.
First question. My insurance company recently bought me a pair of digital signal processors at $2,800 each. And I have several what is called programs for them. So one program I decided to dedicate to single sideband. So Mr. Jim in Zeto suggested that I cut the lower edge at 200 hertz and start tapering it off so there's nothing below 180. The upper edge should be 2800, taper off so there's nothing above 3000. infinitely adjustable. Currently, it's adjusted for my hearing to equalize my hearing loss so that as the frequency goes up, my hearing loss was greater. This thing amplifies proportionally. It also has compression and, I don't know what you call it, decompression. I have a constant noise in the background from tinnitus. So what it does is a low-level sound that would normally be buried in my internal noise floor is raised up so I hear it. That has nothing to do with frequency, it's just the level of the sound. Medium loudness sounds are untouched, and a very loud sound above a certain level is compressed. So if somebody shoots off a gunshot, it would not damage my ears. So what frequency range would you suggest?
Frequency range I would suggest for radio use or just walking around use?
I have several programs. So one is optimized for home quiet, one's optimized for noisy restaurants, one's optimized for classical music to give you the best music experience, and one I'm going to optimize for single sideband.
And Jim's advice was pretty good for that. You know, 300 to 2600 would be more than enough, or 300 to 2800, whatever your pleasure.
Well, that's what I've been walking around with, and it serves very nicely when I go to bear a coffee.
And why is that?
The if I put it in the classical music one, the noisy glass environment of the mezzanine at Paramus Park, you would not believe the background high-frequency components that overshadow the people talking. When I go to the loud restaurant one, I still get too many high-frequency components and forget about the quiet home one. So, if I want to hear the person sit next to me from me, I go to the sideband mode, and sometimes I can click the volume up a little bit or down, so that you can adjust that, and approximately 2 dB steps, 3 dB and a half steps. Can optimize the speech very nicely. So I find sideband mode really great for the streets of New York and Paramus Park.
Any place where you want to basically cut off anything that's not the spoken word. Absolutely. And I think that the somewhat broad, not overly aggressive narrow banding that Jim suggested is what's making that workable without making it sound too tinny or too hollow. So I think that's good. Anybody have any comments?